Thank you for joining me on the Type 1 Divabetic Podcast. I'm your host, Audra Shoup Smith, and this is my story. Thanks for tuning in, y'all. I wanted to make this first episode about my diagnosis story, so you could kind of get some background as to my journey with this disease, because it doesn't fit the mold of most fellow type 1s, and I thought it would be important for you to know how this happened to me and the process of the last 4 years learning my new normal and learning the ins and outs of this disease that I really didn't know anything about prior to my diagnosis. I want you to know right off the bat that I'm a talker and I could ramble all day if you let me, most likely. And sometimes I talk myself in circles. So buckle up. It is certain to be a wild ride, or maybe not wild, but maybe a little confusing. I'm sorry. Y'all are about to get educated. I hope that this is an educational experience for you, in all seriousness. I do think that the general public has a lot of misconceptions about diabetes in general. I know that I did not know the difference between the two types, really, before I was diagnosed. And I didn't realize that my ignorance was hurtful. And once I realized that, I wanted to do whatever I could to change that. And I'm hopeful that you'll feel the same way, or even if you don't feel that way, at least you'll listen and just develop a deeper understanding for what it is that we go through. Some of it's good. I have learned a lot of valuable lessons that I would not have otherwise learned without this diagnosis. I don't mean to always be a rain cloud about it. I have learned a lot, but a lot of it is not good, and it's very difficult in a way that most people don't understand. And so that's all I aim to do, is just shed some light and some perspective on what it's really like. Some days it's going to sound maybe a little over dramatic, because some days are just really dramatic. Some days it's just really hard, and other days it's almost insignificant, because I could just be having a really great day with it. It's all a mixed bag, and at any moment things can go from great to catastrophe, but that's just the nature of the disease. Before I begin recalling the events of that day, which was May 14th, 2013, I think it's important for me to back up a little bit and give a little bit of context. So type 1 diabetes runs in my family. My paternal grandpa had it. He has passed away, not from T1, at least not to my knowledge. And then one of my first cousins also has it. So my entire childhood, my parents were always looking for signs and symptoms of T1 in me and in my siblings, because they knew that we have the genetic predisposition for it, and that's all it takes. A lot of people hear the word diabetes and they think, oh, you must have eaten too much sugar as a kid, or you probably eat like crap now and you did this to yourself, or you must not work out enough. People always hear the word diabetes and they instantly start blaming the patient, which is not a good thing to do with any type of diabetes at all, but especially not with T1, because that is not at all how it comes to be. In my case, and in most people's case, I had a genetic predisposition to this disease, and then I had a virus that attacked my immune system and shut down my pancreas. I didn't really get sick too often when I was growing up. I would get like sinus infections pretty much every year, but it was nothing too major. So when I started getting really sick, my first week of classes, freshman year of college, I knew that something was wrong. And I'm not going to get into too much detail with the backstory and the couple of years leading up to my diagnosis, because we'll be here all day if I do. So I will just sum it up by saying, starting August 2011 until my diagnosis in May of 2013, I basically had one weird sickness after another. It started out with tonsillitis that happened 9 times in 4 months, got my tonsils out. Well, I still had an infection in my body that we didn't know about, of course, at that time. And so it kept manifesting itself in different ways, through digestive problems where they thought I had celiac disease, or through abscessed teeth that resulted in root canals and that almost spread to my brain and killed me. And just random, even little things, like I wouldn't get pink eye, but I would get this weird recurring eye infection that was basically just annoying, but it was pretty much my body just malfunctioning in every way that it could. And I still powered through. I thought I was just, you know, weak or still adjusting to living out of my house for the first time as a young adult. But I remember when I realized something was wrong, I was at my husband's, well, he was my fiance at the time. I was at his college graduation, little shindig after the ceremony at our teeny tiny first apartment. And I remember being in the kitchen getting really emotional. And I was like, I don't know why I'm crying like this. I'm not an in the moment crier. And I just remember my mother-in-law patting my back and saying, "It's okay, love. Like, it's a really emotional day and you're proud of him." And I just remember going, "Yeah, but I don't know. This isn't like me." And that was that. Well, the following day, Brian took off to Ireland with his dad on like a graduation trip before he had to come back and enter the real world. And I went down. We attended school in Ohio, and my family lives in Alabama. So he went to Ireland while I traveled down south with my mom, 10 hours in the car. And on the way there, we had a great time just talking and jamming out to songs that we always loved and playing Sweet Home Alabama as we crossed the state line. And I just was thinking, I have got to move. I cannot stay in Ohio anymore. This is where I belong. But amidst that drive, we had to keep stopping and stopping to get me liquid and to get me a bathroom, because I had to TT like every hour. And at the time, I didn't really think too much of it, because I've always kind of been like that a little bit. And she didn't really think anything of it either. But that, now that I look back, that should have been our first real clue that something was just awry. We get home and I get situated and I'm in good spirits. Like, I'm super happy. We're about to do a bunch of wedding shopping and planning, and I was just excited to be with my family. I missed Brian a lot, but I was excited to be in Alabama. I absolutely love Alabama, and now that I get to live here, I feel super lucky and blessed to just see Tuscaloosa on my return address labels. I'm living exactly where I've always wanted to live, and I'm so lucky. But anyways, I was happy to be in Alabama with my family, and just really excited for the next couple days. And my mom and I scheduled like just super fun days. I'm pretty sure we got a mani-pedi, because that sounds like something we would do after we've been apart for a while. And we just did a whole bunch of shopping. I remember on May 14th, when we were driving that morning to one of the places that we were going to start the day shopping, I kept having to squint really hard at all the signs on the interstate, like the big green signs. And even when we would like just be coming up right on them, I still would have to squint. And my mom noticed And I said, yeah, my prescription must be changing. Like, my eyes must be getting worse as I'm getting older. And so she was like, well, you should make an appointment for when you go back up to Ohio this weekend. So I did. I was just going to go get my eyes checked and likely get a new prescription. No big deal. Well, that was about 10 a.m. And by the time we were heading back, when we were done for the day, it was probably 4 o'clock. So from 10 to 4 was the time span. We're driving back on the interstate, and I can't read one thing that the signs say. It just looks like green and white swirls. I couldn't make sense of any word, no matter how close we were to the sign. And I said, Mama, this is not, this is not right. Like, my prescription has never changed this fast. And I don't know what provoked me to, like, start thinking about the way that I had been feeling, but I did. And I was talking it with her a little bit, and I was like, well, I bet you it's just because I just had finals. I'm stressed with wedding stuff. I bet you I'm just super sleep deprived and, like, just exhausted. So, like, I'm going to spend the next few days, like, getting enough sleep and doing yoga and doing things that, like, my soul needs that I've been, like, depriving myself of because I've been so crazy busy this semester. And we kept talking for a little bit, and then we had dinner and kind of split off in the house doing our own things with the family. And we reconvened later, and somehow it came up again. And I can't even tell you what caused me to say this. I never knew any of the symptoms of diabetes. Never. But I just stop and I go, did these sound like the symptoms of diabetes? I don't know why I said that. Like, I had no clue, no indication of what any of the symptoms were. And the second I said it, I'll never forget the look on her face. She knew the second I asked her that question. And she goes, you know, if you know my mom, good old Lise, she always tries to stay calm. And she just goes, well, it wouldn't hurt to find out. So I'm going to send you to the store. Just go to the pharmacy. And they'll give you, like, a test that you can take that will at least give you an indication of, like, where your levels are at. And I was like, okay, I'll be back. Went to the store, called Brian's phone and left a voicemail for whenever he landed. And it was something along the lines of, hey, I'm on the way to the store to get this test for diabetes. I think something is wrong. I think I feel okay. I don't know. I just remember the message just being super, like, scatterbrained and being like, this is what I'm on my way to do. And I just have a feeling that something is off, even if it's not this. Something is off. Well, the next voicemail he got after that was me crying in a hospital bed, but I digress. So I come home. I had picked up a home A1C test kit. You can get them at, like, any pharmacy. And your A1C is basically a measure of what your glucose levels have been for the past, like, 3 or so months. And it's a blood test. It's just a finger prick, which I say it like that now because a finger prick is nothing to me. Just a finger prick. At the time, that was not the case. It took probably 10 minutes for me to prick my finger, and I don't even think I ended up being the one to do it. I'm pretty sure it's my mom that had to do it because I was just being such a chicken. And so she draws my blood, we put it on the thing, and, like, the receiver thing, and it takes 5 minutes to process. So we just set it aside, and we were watching TV and, like, laughing. Kind of forgot that it was even there. And then all of a sudden, 9.6 flashes on the receiver. And for those of y'all that don't know, which is probably a lot of y'all, and that's fine because this is not common knowledge. If you are not diabetic, you're looking to be under a 5.0 or, like, right at a 5.0, but usually under. That means you have non-diabetic levels. That means that you have, like, consistently in-range blood sugar. And if you have anything above 5.0, you need to go to a doctor and see what's going on. Well, we saw 9.6, and I just look at her, and we're both silent, just staring at each other. Like, what do we do now? Because I didn't have a doctor in Alabama yet. I still lived in Ohio for the next year or so. And so she just calls the ER, tells them what happened, said, my daughter, I mean, she's sitting up talking to me, because they were asking questions, how is she doing? Is she lethargic? Is she this? Is she that? And my mom was like, she's just sitting here right next to me, but what do I do? Do I bring her in? Like, I don't know if I would call this emergency. And they go, ma'am, we can't give you medical advice over the phone, but we can't in good faith say that it's okay to just forget about a 9.6 A1C. And she goes, okay, we'll be there in 30 minutes. So she puts me in the car. We're listening to the radio on the way there, and I'll never forget the song Blessings came on the radio by, oh gosh, I don't remember her name. I think it's Laura something. And it's basically about what if the trials of this life are your mercies in disguise. And I just remember that lyric echoing in my brain as we're going. And I think I did okay at staying calm. I mean, I really didn't think that anything was seriously wrong at this point, because in my opinion, I felt the way that I always feel. Well, the way that I always feel is not normal and was sick. But I had been feeling sick for so long that that became my new normal. So to me, it felt okay because that's what I was used to. So we go to the hospital. We check in and tell them why we're there. And basically all you have to say to get straight back at the ER is say that you suspect you have type 1 diabetes or you are a type 1 diabetic, and you're basically instantly triaged. At least that's been my experience at the hospitals that I've gone to for the most part. So we didn't wait long at all. They took like my vitals and then they tested my blood sugar, and it was 513. Normal blood sugar is 80 to 120. And so at this point, they were concerned that my body was shutting down. Granted, like, that sounds excessive, knowing that the range is 80 to 120 and I was 513. But I've heard stories of people going to the hospital and being like in the 900s or in the thousands even, and still sitting upright and acting normal. And so by contrast, mine was not anything too crazy. So they took me back to your room, hooked me up to a whole bunch of stuff, took a bunch of tests, and then we just waited for hours. There was one man nurse that was a little older, well, middle-aged, and he was just sweet, making jokes, trying to make me laugh, and I was laughing and just trying to be positive, because at that point, I hadn't been told anything yet. And everyone was being nice to me, and I was being nice back. And then the doctor came in and said, your tests have the C-peptide result consistent with type 1 diabetes. And then he went on to explain how my other tests came back pretty decent for someone in my condition. And the way that he was phrasing things made me think, oh, maybe I actually don't have it. And I just remember asking him, like, oh, okay, so I don't have type 1? And he goes, oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, you do. I shouldn't have phrased it like that. I forget exactly what he said. And he's like, I'm so sorry, but yes, you do. And don't worry, we're going to do what we can to help you the best that we can before you go back to Ohio later this week. And I was like, okay, because I was super focused on just getting back up to my apartment and diving right back into schoolwork and wedding planning and just basically not missing a beat. I did not want to stay. They asked me to stay in the hospital, and I wasn't going to. I said, can I just come back tomorrow afternoon and have like an initial appointment with someone? And they finally allowed me to do that. But I was just super stubborn about it. I didn't want to be admitted. I didn't want to stay at the hospital. I didn't, you know, because what they wanted to do was keep me for a few days so they could teach me how to manage everything and then release me, which is what usually happens with younger children. But I was being stubborn and said I was going to go to a doctor the next day, and then I would go to a doctor as soon as I got into town, like the day after I fly home. And so they were like super apprehensive, but eventually conceded because I wasn't going to concede. And the next day, my mom and I go to the appointment. Everyone's being sweet to me. Everyone's talking to me as if someone had just died. And I was just kind of in shock. I didn't really understand what all this meant. And mom was holding it together until we're checking out at the doctor. And she was asking for something. I don't remember what. A lot of this is all blurred together. But she said, yeah, well, my daughter was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes last night. So, and then her voice broke and she started getting red and that little lip and chin start quivering. My mom is so cute when she cries. I can't even. She's just a precious human being. But bless her, she finally was getting emotional about it, which started to make me begin to realize that this was serious and that everything was about to change. But I was just so focused on getting back home and diving into schoolwork, going to work, and just kind of forgetting about it. So because I was diagnosed out of town from where I lived at the time, that made it so that I kind of fell through the cracks a little bit. When you have diabetes, the kind of doctor that you're supposed to see for that is an endocrinologist. It's a specialized doctor that focuses only on the endocrine system, and diabetes is like one of the major diseases that they treat. But I didn't know that, or I was just learning that. And so I immediately got into a primary care physician, just a general medical doctor in the small town where I was living. And I flew back into town on like a Thursday night. It was raining. I was driving myself home from the airport to my apartment. Brian was not in town yet. And I got lost on the way home from the airport and cried on the side of the road. And that was the first time I had cried since I was diagnosed. And then I went to the grocery store because I was out of some things. I'd been gone for almost a week, and I almost had a breakdown in the grocery store because I'll go into detail about this more in future episodes. But as a general guideline, type 1 diabetes is not about sugar. It's not about what I can and can't eat. I really can eat whatever I want. I just need to know how many grams of carbohydrates is in whatever I'm wanting to eat. My insulin pump that I wear acts as if it was a pancreas. I just have to manually input all the information into it for it to do so. So all I have to do is know my blood sugar level at the time of whenever I'm eating, and know roughly how many grams of carbs are in what I'm about to eat. And then I can eat whatever I want. I could eat a dozen Krispy Kreme donuts in a sitting as long as I give enough insulin for that. My diabetes will never be reversed through healthy diet and exercise. I love to eat healthy and I love to run. I'm a runner and I enjoy yoga. I love to be active. So I already enjoy those things. I don't do them because I have to, because of my disease or because it may reverse my disease. I just live healthily because I want to. But if you see me putting something in my mouth that isn't necessarily healthy, just know that I'm allowed to be eating that. I want to be eating that. And I've given enough insulin to cover that. I know my body better than you do. It's just a fact. Just like you know your own body better than anybody else does. Anyways, so, but at this time when I first got back to my apartment and was trying to settle into my life. I was just trying to go get a few things from the grocery. I did not know about counting carbs. I didn't understand how any of this worked, and I didn't know what I needed to be eating or if there were restrictions to what I could eat. And I got so anxious about that that I just left and didn't get any food, and I was too anxious to eat anything because I didn't know what I was doing. I ended up eating like a handful of goldfish for dinner, and I had to start my on my insulin shots. And the first shot I ever took was the night that I got home from the hospital. I was with my mom in her bathroom, and it took forever for me to do it. And I remember just standing there and like getting this feeling of like, okay, I'm about to put it in my skin. I'm going to do it. And then I would chicken out. And this happened for like 10 minutes. My mom was so patient with me, and she's like, here, just let me do it. And I said, no. I was like, please, no. I appreciate that, but if I let you do the first one, then that's forever gonna hinder me. Like, I have to do the first one, and because I have to be doing all of them. And for some reason, I felt really strongly about needing to be the one to give myself my first injection. And I'm glad I did that. That was my first instance of taking control of my care, which has proven to be something very important for me. Fighting insurance companies and trying to find the right doctor and fighting for what I need to survive. It sounds dramatic, but that's what I've had to do. I'm on the phone all the time whenever things go wrong with my medication. That was my first small instance of learning to have to assert myself for the sake of my health. Granted, that was a very small instance, but it proved to be very important for me later on. And so anyways, that was about my first shot. When I finally got to my apartment and was by myself, I gave my next shot and went to sleep. And the next morning was going to be my appointment, and my aunt was going to come with me. And I woke up and I felt like I was dying. And I was like, surely I'm having some type of emergency. And I felt so loopy and weak, and I just wanted to cry. And I was like, just get to the kitchen and test your blood sugar. And so I tested my blood sugar, and it was 137, which, like I said earlier, the normal range is 80 to 120. So that was a little bit high out of range. But to me, that was the lowest I had felt in months, maybe even years. And so it wasn't considered a low blood sugar, but it felt super, super low to me. So I was having all the hypoglycemia symptoms that I have when I have lows now below 80. Because that was the first time my body had been anything close to normal range in so long. And my aunt helped me get to my doctor appointment. I was very displeased with that doctor. She did not seem to know the difference between types of diabetes. She really just made me feel bad about myself when I knew this wasn't my fault. The doctors in Birmingham had told me it was not my fault. Nothing I could have done could have prevented this. It's just my genetics. And then I have this other doctor who was extremely ignorant about the specific types, sitting there just making me feel terrible when I already felt terrible enough, and I just wanted to be educated. And so I had a frustrating appointment with her and was just feeling really lost. But then I was like, you know what? I'm going to figure this out myself. I called and made an endocrinologist appointment, but the earliest they could get me in was like 3 months from the time that I called, which is kind of crazy, you know. Like, it's a good thing that I am self-sufficient and I'm a learner, and I really cared to learn how to do this myself, because if I didn't, I would have spent 3 months making stupid mistakes just out of pure not knowing how to handle this new diagnosis. So basically for the first 3 months of my diagnosis, Google was my doctor. It sounds like normally not a good skill, but it worked for me. That's where I learned a lot of just the basics of how to dose my insulin, how to treat a low blood sugar, how to treat a high blood sugar. By the time I finally saw my first endo, they were impressed with how I had been doing my first 3 months because I really took control of my care. And that sucked, and it was really hard, and I cried a lot, and I'm not a crier, like I've said earlier, but it was extremely emotional. And then, you know, Brian and I were engaged, but we weren't married yet, and we were young. I mean, I was 20, and he was 22. He could have easily walked away, you know. You get a diagnosis like that, I mean, it's not terminal, but it's life-threatening and it's chronic. And that man is my legal caregiver, and he knew that before we got married. He could have been like, you know, I don't think this is going to work. But that's not the man that I fell in love with. That's not who he is at all. And he really, from day one, has been just such an advocate for me and just been like my number one fan. And he sometimes knows how to manage my levels and my symptoms better than I do. He just is so in tune to the way that my body responds to certain things that really is super cool, and it's a connection I'll never have with anybody else. It's just on a completely different level, because he's been there from the get-go. I mean, not the very first night when I was diagnosed, because he happened to be completely out of the country, but ever since the day he flew home, he's been there every step of the way, except for the past 6 months as of recently, which is something that I will cover in a later episode. He left for the military 5.5 months ago. And so in the nearly 4 years I've been T1, these past 6 months have been really the first time that I've lived alone with T1, and the first time that it's just been me relying on me for my care. I've always been very self-sufficient and independent with my care, but it is nice to have him there for the days that it is just too much, or the days that I'm so exhausted and I feel sick because my levels were everywhere, but I still need to get out and go to the store. Like, he'll get up and go to the store. Or in the middle of the night, if I'm having a bad low blood sugar and I don't wake up to it, he can sense it and he knows, and he'll wake up and get me what I need and we'll carry on. So it's been a big adjustment the past 6 months just with his absence. That's something I'll cover later, but I'm just so grateful to have somebody there that knows how I'm feeling, how my body reacts, because with T1, it's an autoimmune disease, and so the smallest things can throw everything off. Like if I just get 30 minutes to an hour less of sleep than what I'm used to, that's enough to send my whole system into disarray. Just the smallest little things will impact my immune system so harshly. And so it is really, it's just a game changer to have somebody there who just gets it. And even if they don't get it, you know, he doesn't have it, so he can't really get it, but he sees what I have to go through and he hears what I have to say. And on the days that he doesn't know what to say, he just listens. And that, there's so much merit to that. And so if you're listening to this podcast because you have someone in your life who's T1 and you're trying to get more information on it or gain kind of close to what their perspective would be like, or at least the perspective of someone that has it, just know the best thing that you can do for them is just listen and not blame them and not make them feel like this is their fault, because it's not. And, you know, my fellow T1s that are listening to this know that we can be doing literally everything right and perfect by the book and still end up in the hospital, or still end up feeling terrible or exhausted or having crazy levels. And that's just how it is sometimes. So the best thing you can do is just be there and listen and really try to understand. You'll never fully get it. That's just, I mean, there's lots of things I'm never going to fully get because I don't experience them, but I like to keep an open mind, and I like to really try to have empathy for people that are going through things that I'll never understand truly, or at least not personally like that. And so I just hope that over this past episode and the next few episodes to come, that you just keep an open mind. And if you have questions, please ask me. I'm so happy to answer them for you. I would love to cover everything all the time and not have anything fall through the cracks, but it's so much to know, and I don't want to keep talking your face off. But if you have any questions for me, feel free to email me at smith.audra.m@gmail.com. If you have anything that you want me to share on my podcast, feel free to email me that as well, or any questions, any personal stories that you have. I would love to hear it all. And if you email me, I'm going to share it in my next episode, unless you tell me not to. So just keep that in mind. Follow me on social media, Instagram, I'm Audra Shoup Smith. And, well, pretty much everywhere, I'm Audra Shoup Smith. Thank you so much for listening, and I'm so excited to dive into all of the huge range of topics that we're about to cover over the coming weeks. There's so many avenues of life with this disease that there's no way I could cover everything in one episode, and so each episode will have a specific topic, and some episodes won't really focus on type 1. Type 1 will always permeate into the discussion because it's just such a huge part of my life, but there'll be some episodes that I just talk about the military or work or my faith or marriage or just the most random stuff. My obsession with the musical Hamilton, or my obsession with my dog Hamilton. So it's definitely going to be an interesting journey here, and I'm so excited to have you along. Thank you so much for listening.